Clarence is a prisoner in the Colorado Department of Corrections. He's been in for 28 years for a sexual assault in Denver's Five Points neighborhood that he has said from day one he didn't commit. I met him 9 years ago when I was working at the Denver Post. I spent a year with a fellow reporter, Miles Moffitt, on a project called Trashing the Truth. That was an national investigative series about the loss and destruction of DNA evidence. Clarence's case was the first case that we started the five-day series with, and in some ways the case that most typified the issue that we were writing about, because several years after he had gone to prison and had always maintained his innocence, he waited out the DNA revolution and watched the OJ trial on TV. He saw O.J. Simpson's lawyer, Barry Scheck, use DNA to help exonerate Mr. Simpson, and he wrote Mr. Scheck, just like lots of prisoners throughout the country, and asked him to represent him. Mr. Scheck said, yes, if you raise $1,000 from prison, Clarence raised $1,000 from fellow inmates in prison. He got court orders to test all the DNA evidence in his case that, according to him, would have proved his innocence. It certainly would have proven who did it. And the Denver police put all the evidence in a box. They marked the box, do not destroy. And before it was sent to the lab, they destroyed it. They threw it in a dumpster.
Before that situation, the original conviction was very bizarre because he was basically convicted on the basis of somebody who said that she dreamed that he was the perpetrator. This was the rape victim herself.
Exactly. So she was attacked in her home in Five Points. The police asked who did it. She named three men. Their names were Elsie, Earl, and Darnell. She repeatedly named those three men, saying one of them she believed had done this to her. She had named them over and over again. About a day and a half later, after she had been kind of sedated in the hospital and had met with her sister and her best friend, she told police that it was Clarence, Moses L., and they asked, how do you know? And she said, well, he came to me in a dream, meaning the only evidence tying him to this case at all, the only evidence was this woman's so-called dream. And the police never questioned any of those other men in connection with this case, and they bought it. And what the victim didn't mention is that she had been fighting with Clarence's wife in the days before the attack and had vowed publicly in front of a lot of people to get back at her. And so the theory is that her way of getting back at Stephanie, Clarence's wife, was to name her husband, Clarence, as her attacker.
When Clarence contacted the Innocent Project, when Clarence tried to have the DNA re-examined, which would have most likely completely exonerated him, only to find that that had been destroyed. What was the reaction from local law enforcement, and particularly the district attorney?
There was a bit of an investigation after a couple of years after Clarence had filed what's called a post-conviction appeal, trying to get a new trial based on the destruction of his evidence. And they did an investigation in the police department, and it included the communications with the DA's office. And they did conclude that the police messed up and that the DA had not communicated with them properly. There was a breakdown in communication. But that wasn't enough legally to give Clarence a remedy or to give him a new trial. And part of our original series, Trashing the Truth, that we did in, I believe, 2007 for the Denver Post, was challenging the law of the land on that issue. There's a Supreme Court case called Arizona versus Youngblood. And it basically says that police and law enforcement officials can destroy or throw out evidence with impunity, meaning nothing could happen to them, unless you can prove that they did so out of bad faith. And as anyone in the law knows, bad faith is an almost impossible thing to prove. You can't prove that they wanted to throw it out. So if they just accidentally threw it out, i.e. took a box marked with a Sharpie, do not destroy, and throw it in a dumpster, nothing, Clarence didn't get a new trial. Nobody really, there's no culpability, no responsibility anywhere. It was just kind of oh yeah, mea culpa, we screwed up. People got slapped on the wrist. Nobody lost their job. Nobody got docked anything. Life went on. And in the meantime, Clarence has done 28 years in prison.
Well, in addition to that, the destruction of evidence, a convicted rapist who's in prison has actually admitted and has confessed to the crime.
That's right. So when we were working on our series in 2007, we got a press release from the DA's office. I was deep into this case. Clarence's was my case. Miles Moffitt was very deep into the Tim Masters case. Tim was the first man exonerated through DNA. Well, you know, people are pretty well familiar with his case in Colorado. And so we got a press release from the DA's office saying, hey, we, as they like to do, they like to solve cold cases with DNA, which is terrific. And there was a rape in 1993, not far from this incident, in Five Points. I believe it was 21 blocks away. Nailing a guy named L.C. Jackson for the rape at knife point in 1993 of a mother and her 9-year-old daughter. And this was a press release that Mitch Morrissey, the Denver DA, was putting out touting the cracking of this cold case. And they took him to trial and they convicted him. And before they went to trial, we went to Mitch and we said, hey, you know, L.C. Jackson was the first guy named in the victim's outcry. He was the first person named. And we know, you know, that he's got this history of violent sex assault and rape. So why not reopen this case? And Mitch kept saying over and over then, including in front of the legislature and on videotape with us, that she never named L.C. Jackson. It was this kind of strange thing coming out of his mouth repeatedly, even though we kept giving him the paperwork. And his office had all the paperwork and all the police reports and the transcript from the preliminary hearing saying, yes, Mitch, actually, in fact, she did name L.C. Jackson. And for some reason, he just wouldn't hear it. So not only would he not reopen Clarence's case then, which may have cut off, let's see, 9 years out of his life in prison, but he kept insisting that actually there was no connection with L.C. Jackson. So fast forward then, 6 years, 3 years ago, L.C. Jackson, who doesn't know Clarence, writes him in prison and says, I don't know where to start, but send your lawyers. It's time to bring to light what was done in the darkness. And so about 3 years ago, L.C. Jackson started admitting that he actually had rough sex and attacked the woman who was the victim in the Clarence Moses L. case. The exact time and the exact place of in the attack that Clarence is doing has done 28 years for. It's a confession. And basically what's news here is that went to hearing. It took 3 years to go to court and be heard for L.C. Jackson to take the stand and confess. And he did that about 3 weeks ago. And we're waiting for a decision to see if Clarence's conviction will be overturned.